Today on Snail Trail 4x4, Jimmy calls Tyler a 16-year-old, and Tyler yells at a Jeep. Today's episode of Snail Trail 4x4 is brought to your ear holes by...
Sneedy's Off-Road is your number one source for custom and aftermarket products for your 4x4, ATV, and side-by-sides. Quality parts that don't break your bank. If we don't have what you're looking for, we'll get it. Sneedy's Off-Road. The trail starts here.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how awesome getting ready for Baja 1000s in a Toyota is, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and gents. My name is Tyler. I'm your host for this evening. And sitting here next to me is my lovely and vivacious co-host. Is that vivacious or is that what's the difference? What's the definition of vivacious?
I don't know. And I'm not sure if I want to know. Okay.
Anyways, my co-host today is the one and only Jimmy Jett. Mr. Vivacious, how are you doing?
I am doing very well, Tyler. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Nice. Thank you for asking once.
Yeah, that was probably the
maybe
first time.
Maybe twice.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I finally washed my hands off from some Toyota 4Runner grease.
That's a good kind of grease to have on your hands.
I know. It moisturizes. It's a moisturizer.
Nice. Well played, good sir.
Yeah. Yes.
We'll ask what you're doing with Toyota grease a little bit later.
Okay.
But for now, let's say a huge shout out to all of you guys out there. Without all of you, we would not be doing this. I don't know. We might be. We just wouldn't be recording.
Yeah, we wouldn't. We'd be sitting in the shop right now talking. Yeah,
exactly. We'd be sitting in the shop having
you know
more
what?
Beer.
Having sorry more to interrupt, pizza. But you know what?
No, you're not.
We would probably... I don't know if we talk more or talk less because we almost don't talk to each other away from each other now.
Yeah.
Because we're like, oh, I did something really fun and really cool, but I can't tell you about it until we're on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to say a midlife crisis, but that level of anxiety hit me today when I had to explain something to you when we were in the shop working on the 4Runner. And I was like, well, I can't talk about it because we're going to talk about it on the podcast later, but I got to talk about it because you need to know this.
About what's happening.
This, whatever is this going
right,
on. Yeah.
Right.
So I had a very difficult decision to make.
Yeah.
So.
Well, when I'm asking you about a specific part and you're like, I can't tell you.
I have to
wait for like 5 hours so we can record a podcast.
Yeah. So we pretty much just kind of work in silence or yell at each other the whole time we're in the shop. So
that or we talk about ridiculous ideas for builds or stupid things that we could add to Samantha.
Yes, which is on a big list now. And then the list is growing and we're coming up with some different ideas for SEMA 2020. So we'll be doing a little more pondering on all of that and let you guys be filled in with the details. If anything ever comes to fruition, we got to talk to a bunch of people first. So,
but if you have any other, or if you have some wild and crazy ideas, please write us.
I'm thinking of getting Charlotte to a 600-to-1 crawl ratio on 42s.
I'm okay with that.
For SEMA 2020.
That'd be fun. So I think I messaged you with an idea recently.
You messaged Jews?
You.
Messaged you?
I messaged you.
Messaged you.
Is that like the, you know, au jus sauce for a French dip?
Yes.
No, I messaged you about an idea, which it was to...
Why are you messaging Asian people about ideas? I'm sorry. But see, I got jokes. I got jokes, man.
You barely got a smile. About Anyways. A four-wheel drive Tercel station wagon.
That is true. You did message me about that.
I solid axle swapping that thing.
Solid axle rear.
Yeah. I think would be badass.
Tercel one tons.
On 42s.
Yeah, 42s. Yeah.
With the stock motor.
Yeah. God, it would go. It wouldn't be able to go.
No, it wouldn't. We'd have to do gearing.
Yep. That'd be fun, though.
I mean, when I was in SEMA, I saw a Razor on, like, tractor tires.
I saw that on Mike, his video.
Uh-huh.
It had speakers in the tire well, in the wheel wells?
It had speakers in the wheel wells. It also had speakers near the transmission.
Interesting.
Because it had, like, a funky gear reduction box or some way to, like, lower the output shaft of...
Yeah, that's very popular with subframe vehicles.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So, yeah.
And so, where it lowered the output shafts for the drive shafts, they filled some of that void with speakers.
Nice.
That's ridiculous.
I need to put speakers in the wheel well of the 4Runner.
Hell yeah.
Dude. Next on the to-do list for Baja Prep 2019.
Yeah. We'll talk about that on a future episode of checklists.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, yeah, anyways, back to you guys. We would not be doing this without you guys, or at least recording it and putting in the extra work and trying to see what other shenanigans we can come up with, like Tercel on one tons or getting Charlotte up on 42s for SEMA next year, or a bunch of other kind of random kooky harebrained ideas we've had, doing an IFS IRS rear engine mounted pickup for Samantha build. So, yeah, thank you guys to out there. We love the support. We love seeing you guys. We love hearing from you guys. We love meeting you guys on the trail. We love getting questions from you guys. So we have a episode scheduled coming up here with a bunch of questions, because we have started collecting a lot of them and we need to bring the pool of questions down. So we'll have a questions episode, maybe a couple of them coming up here that have a bunch of you guys' questions that have been sent in over the past couple months. Thank you to all the Patreons out there. You guys are fantastic. Thank you to all the people on the Facebook page making fun of me. You guys are jerks. And yeah, that's it, right?
I think so.
Good. We're going to end on me calling everybody jerks.
That's fine with me.
I know. Make me to be the bad guy. It's all right. I'll be the scapegoat for you, buddy. Anyways, don't forget to get in for the November.
I'm just sitting over here nodding.
He is just nodding for all of those that cannot hear what he's doing. But don't forget to get in for the November giveaway, $210 of recovery equipment from Freedom Ropes. And if you wanted anything from Freedom Ropes in the meantime, go check them out, freedomropes.com, and use the discount code SNAILTRAIL. That'll get you 10% off the entire website. And also, if you're looking to add any new equipment, like maybe a Rock Assault housing or some new wheels, which I'm going to be doing here soon. We'll talk about that too. Or some six shooter knuckles, or maybe you want to get a taco box, or I don't know, he could probably get a taco box. Go check out Sneevy's Off-Road. So sneevysoffroad.com. Good guy, great family. Can get you anything. We'll give you the best prices. So hit them up and definitely show the support over there too. It really helps all the juices go around and everything keep flowing here. So yeah, I think that's it for the updates.
Sounds
updates,
good.
Updates, updates, updates.
Yeah, just a few new videos came out. You know, we have the SEMA build, or the SEMA video came out.
Which is not a gladiator video.
Which is not a gladiator video. Yes. I did spend a good chunk of, well, a solid day just searching for Toyotas.
Nice. The first day?
Which was, no, second day, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, the first day I was in the four-wheel drive section, and I was like, there's no Toyotas. Like, where are all the Toyotas? Like, there's maybe like 5 to maybe 10 max, probably more like 5 up there.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, all right, day two, my goal is to find Toyotas.
Yeah.
That was what I, you know, so I walked around a good chunk of SEMA trying to find all these Toyotas. And then in the meantime, I had a few interviews or, you know, meetings to go to.
Nice.
Not really interviews, but.
You guys will hear all about that on Monday's episode.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be the part two of the Jimmy at SEMA. I was trying to find out who put those together. Jimmy SEMA.
Jimmy at SEMA. Jimmy SEMA.
SEMA-Amy. SEMA-Amy.
Yeah. And I hope you guys enjoyed part three of SEMA. The
behind the scenes behind the bonus scenes episode.
Bonus drunk fest.
That's a good one. It's just the drunk fest video the drunk fest podcast.
I swear we went to SEMA. I think most of us have video footage of us actually there. Uh-huh. If you listen to that podcast, you'd think that we'd never actually made it.
You guys just met up and at the house and then drank the whole time and never even went there.
We just went to Jason's house.
Yeah, there you go. Nice. Raided the wine cellar and whiskey cellar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. So check out that episode. Hope you guys enjoyed that one as well. That came out yesterday, November 13th. This one is coming. This episode's on Thursday, our normal Thursday release on November 14th. This is episode 43, sir.
Ooh, okay.
So, rocking and rolling, baby.
Dang. Keeping we need to line moving. Up episode 50. We need to figure out what we're going to do for episode 50.
I don't, yeah.
We had a, remember we had a, I think on the Patreon account, they were talking about doing a live podcast with the Patreons.
That would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
As episode 50.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put Maybe that we out can, on the Facebook page and see if you guys are going to be interested in that.
Yeah. And do it at a location, a brewery or somewhere.
Yeah.
And hang out with some patrons and, you know, and if you're in the $20 tier, we'd probably buy you a beer because we pay for entrance fees and to stuff that we haven't had yet.
Absolutely.
But we do mean to do something and we do mean to come true on that promise.
Mm-hmm.
At some point in time. Yeah. But that might be fun to meet up at a brewery somewhere. If you're local, it'd probably be a lot easier. If you're not local, you might have to drive. Sorry, if we have people out there in Canada.
Yeah. And New Zealand.
And New Zealand.
The New Zealand guy can come up here and get a beer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll buy
I'd rather
we'll
go to Spites.
Yeah. A Spitz.
Spitz?
I'm pretty sure it's called Spitz.
Spitz. Spites.
Spites. Spitz. I thought it was Spitz.
Oh, that brewery was so good.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
What was that? Queenstown?
I believe so, actually, yeah.
I think it was.
I didn't go to the brewery. I just had a lot of the beer while I was there.
I did a brewery tour there.
Oh.
It was super cool. The brewery was built on a natural water spring. Like, it was built on top of it.
Okay.
And they literally piped the water spring.
Uh-huh.
And it automatically pumps the water to, like, the fourth floor. And then the entire brewery is designed to be gravity fed down.
Wow.
So all I really have to do, like, mechanically is move the hops up to, like, level 3 and maybe malts or whatever up to certain levels. Otherwise, the water's pumped up there and everything else is dropped, like, drops levels during the fermentation process.
That's cool.
Super rad.
I wonder if that's the definition of trickle down economics.
Maybe. And they also have a water fountain out front. Mm-hmm. That you can anybody and everybody can go to at any point in time and fill up water out of that natural spring.
Really?
Yeah. So I filled up like 2 Nalgenes.
Nice.
Because we're doing a road trip. So I pumped up with some water and we took off.
I'm kind of bummed now. Like we were on a adventure tour, adventurism, whatever it is, where we worked for 2 weeks and then traveled the country for 2 weeks doing high adrenaline adventure tours, and brewery stops were not in our agendas, unfortunately.
Boo. Yeah. Yeah, that was the night I think I spoke about it before where my brother and I went to a brewery and we went out drinking and then we decided to walk across town to go back to our hotel and then we found out it was like frat night or pledging night or whatever they
rush week, rush or week rush
that's
night,
what it's called. Yeah. And we were hanging out with all these fraternity and sorority people as they were trying to rush in to get into the fraternities and sororities, and we started out drinking them all and they're like, "Where are you guys from?" Like, California. I thought Americans couldn't drink. We're like, "Huh? We're not normal Americans."
That's much better than us. We got into a fight with a rugby team. Into a brawl with a rugby team. So
I decided to drink with some cool people.
Yeah, that was a better option than what we did.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah. anyways, so I've been mentioning this Baja prep, right?
Mm-hmm.
So next week is actually the week of the Baja 1000.
I know. I'm jealous.
Which is
going to
be freaking awesome. And I, through my, a friend of my dad's, he used to work on, Baja race teams.
Oh, cool.
For the 500 and 1000s. And so, he goes every single year. And since he's gotten out of working on the teams, he still goes down every year, but for like the week around the race. And then what he does is he ends up his week in Ensenada as the Baja 1000 is coming through Ensenada.
Oh, that's cool.
So, turns out I finally have some details about the trip.
Right.
That's the kind of the goal of the trip is to go and mob around in Baja, California for 5 days and then end up in Ensenada for the last 2 to 3 days.
Oh,
and
cool.
Watch the Baja 1000 come through and then come back up into California. So,
wow, that's going to be awesome.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of driving. We're expecting to cover about 1,000+ pavement miles and then another roughly 800 off-road miles.
Wow. All right.
And I'm going to be doing it all in the second gen 4Runner.
Yeah.
So
green eggs for ham.
Green eggs, green rigs for hams.
Green rigs for hams.
Green rigs for hams.
Green eggs and green. Ham.
Sherpa, you're going to have to correct him again. So that's kind of what's coming up. I'm leaving. Let's see. If you're listening to this on Thursday when it releases, then I'm leaving in 2 days,
mm-hmm.
Saturday. We're recording this Tuesday night. So. And there's a lot of stuff I still have to do. There's a lot of stuff I had to fix and repair from my previous wheeling trips.
Right, which we still need to talk about.
Oh, we haven't talked about all that yet?
We haven't talked about your Slick Rock trip.
Oh, my God. We are so far behind. Okay, yeah. So, should we start there?
Yeah, I think we should definitely... I mean, if you did some damage, we need to know about it, man.
That is true.
I mean, last time you went out wheeling, you just got too comfy with the seat and laid it way back like an easy 40 kind of guy and run into trees and drag your diff across rocks. So what happened out on Slick Rock?
So nothing really big happened on Slick Rock. So I went with a group of guys pretty much from the NorCal 4x4 page. And what's funny is the guy that kind of put the trip together decided the night before to try and fix the damages that he had incurred from a trip 2 weeks earlier. And he's
smart.
Yeah, smart, right? And he didn't get it done. Surprise. And so we wake up on the next morning, Saturday morning, to go out to Slick Rock. And this is one of the trips where the secretary was actually like, yeah, I'll go for a day trip kind of thing.
Okay.
I was like, hey, as a reward for coming off-roading, going wheeling, let's stay at the cabin in Arnold and go wine tasting all day Sunday. She was like, oh, that's even better. So that was the plan for the weekend. Went out to Slick Rock, and our goal was we went to the cabin Friday night, and Saturday we had to leave the cabin, and we were told to meet at the trailhead at 8 a.m.
Okay.
And I'm like...
And there's no service at the cabin.
There's no... I mean, I can do Wi-Fi calling.
Okay.
At the cabin, but he didn't inform everybody. I think he told one person out of the... Supposedly, we were supposed to have like 12 rigs on this trip. And okay. He only told one person. So, we're busting our butts to drive and get to the trailhead by 8 a.m. And we get there, and there's one other rig there. And I got there like 8:05, 8:10, right?
Okay.
So, I walk up to this other guy. I'm like, hey... are you with the NorCal 4x4 group? He goes, yeah, pretty much. I was like, Kenny put this together? He goes, yeah. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm in the right place. He's like, how long have you been here? He goes, about 20, 25 minutes. I was all, oh, so I haven't missed the group or anything? I'm not late? He goes, no, you know, you're the first person I've seen yet. And I'm like, interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of waiting around a little bit, and about 8:45, two other rigs show up. And I'm like, okay, 8:45, why are you guys late? And they're all, well, the guy that put it together, Kenny, he said that we were going to meet on the slabs at Slick Rock at 8 a.m., but he gave everybody the GPS waypoint of the Lake Alpine side of the Slick Rock.
Oh my gosh.
So they went all the way up to Lake Alpine
and then turned
and
around.
Realized they were at the wrong side of the trails, came all the way back down.
Holy cow.
So I was like, oh, did you see anybody else along the way? And they're like, nope, we didn't at all. I was like, interesting. Okay. So we're kind of sitting around. So finally we figured out the secretary had cell service on the slabs.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
So I was like, give me your phone. I'm making a phone call. So I called Kenny and I'm like, hey, Kenny, where are you, buddy? He goes, oh, I'm not coming. I didn't get my rig fixed in time. I was like, were you going to tell anybody about this? He goes, oh, I told Kelly about it. And I was like, oh, okay. And I looked at Kelly and I was like, did Kenny call you? He goes, oh, yeah. I was like, thanks, Kelly. So
nice.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, you know, who else is supposed to be showing up? Did a bunch of other people bail and I not know about it? Because right now we're sitting here with 4 rigs and I've heard there's supposed to be upwards of 12.
Mm-hmm.
And we're supposed to be meeting at 8 a.m. It's 8:45 and we're missing 8 rigs. Did they all go to Alpine? What's going on? He goes, no. They're coming up from the Bay Area. It's a group of 7 to 8 rigs from the San Francisco Bay Area Jeep Association, SF Baja. And I'm like, okay, they're not here yet. Do I need to wait for them? He goes, oh, no, they're driving through Arnold about 10 minutes ago. I think their plan was to be there at 9. And I was like, well, then why was our plan all along to be here at 8 if they're not showing up till 9? I could have stopped and, like, gotten lunch somewhere.
Yeah, or coffee or something.
He goes, oh, no, I'm just sorry. I didn't realize that was blah, blah, blah. And I was like, come on. Okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, that's fine. So we wait around and 9 hits, 9:15 hits, 9:20 hits, 9:30 hits. And I call Kenny back. I'm like, dude, it's 9:30. Do you know where these guys are? Or still, there's only the 4 of us here. And he goes, I don't know. They should have been there a little bit ago. And I was like, all right, well, you know, should we wait for them or can we just go run there? Are they capable? Do they have somebody that knows the trail? Like, and he goes, I don't know, you can either wait or you can go run the trail. And I was like, yes, that would be my 2 options. Thank you.
Well, why was there no ham opportunity?
Because I was pretty much the only person on the entire trip with a ham license.
Yeah.
So we ended up
waiting. Including the SF Baja people?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
So that and... there's not very good repeater coverage in that area. I did find out there's a repeater in Pinecrest, surprisingly, that covers Slick Rock pretty well.
Okay.
So I need to try that out next time I'm out there. But so we waited around until 9:45. And I'm like, okay, we're waiting 45 minutes past your guys' preferred time to get there. I was like, I'm not waiting anymore. So I turned to the other 3 rigs and I was like, hey guys, you are more than welcome to wait here. We're going to go up the trail. I just fine on this trail running it by myself. If you guys want to come along. I'd love to have you guys. I think with this group of 4, we're going to get through the trail without too many problems. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Right.
I don't know who's coming from the SF Baja group. If 2 of the people came who I've heard were coming, then it was going to be a very interesting day once they got to the gauntlet.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, not to sound mean or anything, but you know, people need to bring properly equipped vehicles to wheel on trails they want to wheel on.
Right.
So I don't want to babysit people all day.
Right.
I think us 4 is going to be a fun group. Run the trail. We'll have a good time. Or you guys can wait, catch up to me up the trail, or maybe not catch up to me. I don't know.
So what other rigs were there? What were the other ones?
They were all JKs.
Okay.
So there was a 2-door JK and 2 4-door JKs. And it was funny because the whole time, so these guys, I don't know, man, Jeep owners, I don't know. There's something wrong with you guys in the head. JK owners.
They're their own breed.
They are their own breed. Because they're sitting there talking. They're like, man, Tyler, you're going to get a Jeep. You're going to get a Jeep here someday. And I was like, don't get me wrong. Like, I like the way Jeeps look. I think they can be very super capable vehicles. I just don't like driving them. And it's something to do with the way I'm positioned in the driver's seat and the dashboard.
They're much more like erect seating in a way.
I don't.
It's more like a chair.
I don't like being erect, Jimmy.
I know. Where like a Toyota's a bit more laid back.
Yeah.
You know, we're like in like the reclined height of the seat to the height to the floor is less than the height of the seat to the floor in a Jeep. You're sitting like you're sitting in a chair in a Jeep, and in a Toyota, it's
like
a little bit more. Yeah, a little bit more laid out.
Maybe that's what it is. I still haven't like put my finger on what it is I don't like about sitting in a Jeep. I don't like it. And so they're all, you're going to get one. I was like, no, I don't think so, guys.
I think by this point in time, it'd be almost like sacrilege for us to get a Jeep.
Right.
Like, so, I'm going to have to quit doing all snail trail 4x4 stuff, live for another 10 years so everybody forgets who I am.
Yeah.
And then maybe I would buy a Jeep.
You're going to have to change your name. Yeah.
Yeah. Social security number. All of it. And man. I'll be like Jimmy Jeeper.
You can go into witness protection.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. The second thing was they kept talking about how, oh my God, I feel like, you know, if I'm buying Jeep parts, if it's under $1,000, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll get it. But if it's over $1,000, I start thinking twice about getting it. And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, if it's over $100, I think twice about getting it. And so.
Well, that's one of the big things about Jeeps and Toyotas, right?
Well, I
mean, at least for our Toyotas that are a little older and things of that nature, where we, you know, Toyota, older Toyota rock crawlers do a lot of the maintenance and work and fabrication of their parts.
Yep.
Where new Jeep people buy it.
Buy
it and put it on, or buy it and have somebody else put it on.
Yeah.
Right? But it's a like a bolt-on thing.
Yeah.
You know? Where a Toyota guy's like, I built my rock sliders and welded them on myself. And I spent this much money for a DOM tubing and then my time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. And so, speaking of DOM tubing, so they were talking about, you know, hey, and then I was like, you know, that's a thing that bugs me about Jeeps is that there's this extra cost automatically put on anything for a Jeep just because it's for a Jeep. And I'm like, that's just stupid to me. I'm sorry, but I refuse to spend more money on something just because it's a higher status or something, a higher perceived status. So so we're talking about that, and he goes, yeah, blah, blah, yeah, I just bought new steering, all new steering, and it cost me $1,000 or $1,200. And I was like, I just redid my whole steering for $100.
Right.
And then they all kind of looked at me and they're all, yeah, that's the difference between you and us. And I was like, yeah, I guess so. So, yeah, so we ended up goofing off at the beginning of the trail for 2 hours waiting for everybody. And then we took off and they never showed up. We never saw them. So we took off down the trail and had a good time. Everybody made it through the day. No issues. We made a really good pace. We had one guy who it was only his third time out wheeling, and he was on 38s, I think, 3.5, 4-inch lift, something like that, and is a two-door JK. And so I kept asking him, I was like, hey, do you want to spot through this obstacle? Because he was right behind me. And so we were just on the MERS channels on the radios.
Right. Okay.
And so I was like, hey, do you want to spot through this obstacle, or do you just want to kind of watch my line and get an idea of it? Keep in mind, I'm a little bit longer wheelbase than you, so you might have a slightly different line, but you'll get an idea of what's going to happen as you go through this stuff. He goes, eh, no, go ahead. I'll just kind of follow and watch what happens. I said, okay. And he did great. He did awesome. His third time out or something like that, and he's just kind of a natural. I picked it up quick. So that was cool to have him along the trip. Throughout the whole time, I was just kind of saying, oh, here we're coming up on this obstacle. If you want to go to the left, there's a line to the left, or there's a line to the right, there's a line in the center. Here's the difficulties of them. Choose your poison. Pick your poison, kind of thing. And so we're able to get through the trail pretty quickly. We got through from the trailhead to the gauntlet in about 2.5 hours. That includes an hour stop to clear some trees out of the trail.
Oh, wow.
So
you guys were cooking.
We were cooking. Didn't feel like we were cooking, though, which was kind of cool. So it was a nice, relaxing, good pace. Nobody had any issues. And we spent an hour, cleared a tree out of the trail, and there was already people making a bypass through the forest, you know? And I'm like, you guys, just help clear the trail. If you get to a spot, don't make bypasses through the forest. That's how trails get shut down. So,
did you have your chainsaw?
No.
Oh, what?
I know, because again, I wasn't camping, so I think because I'm not camping, there's a chance I will probably not need it. And every time I have not brought my chainsaw, I wish I had it for something. So, this guy, one of the guys, O'Kelly, he had this little hand, it's a steel hand saw that's like 14 inches long, okay, something like that. And he pulls this thing out and we're like, really?
Yeah.
What is that thing going to do? And that shit can cut trees, man.
Oh, yeah?
I was so impressed. Because he was looking at it. He goes, this is the most expensive saw I've ever purchased. And I was like, how much was it? He goes, 90, 95 bucks, something like that. And I was like, you bought a 14-inch little handsaw for $90? What is wrong with you? And he goes, I said the same thing to the lady at the steel at the store when I bought it. And she said, honestly, if you don't, go ahead, try it. If you don't like it, bring it back. We'll give you full money back, no matter what shape it's in. And so he bought it, and he loves it. And now I'm like, that actually works really good. I'm debating getting one myself.
There's some really good ones.
Yeah.
As most of you guys know out there, that I'm in the bonsai thing, and that it's mutilating trees in a way.
Yeah.
And I've gone where our bonsai meeting is for the club is at a Buddhist temple, and we'll do maintenance on the temple's garden.
Oh, nice.
And we'll usually do it with some like professional tree trimmers for like large events like this,
okay,
or large areas like this, and they have these like little hand saws that's just like the like a Fiskars kind of style, yeah, one where it's just a handle and then it has a curved blade.
Yep.
And I was like, wow,
yeah,
like, this thing cuts through a tree like butter. It saws it does wonderful work. And I went and looked it up, and it was like $100.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, I can't really fathom spending that much, but it is so, could be so worth it.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it was the same sort of style.
So anyways, if anybody's, it sounds exactly like it.
Okay.
So if anyone's interested or have been looking at those saws and you're looking for something to spend $100 on, highly recommend getting one of those.
Nice.
So we got the trees out, cleared them out of the way. We had to winch a couple of them. I had to winch and pull different angles and set up snatch blocks to break the tree first and then winch it up out of the way and break the second tree, get that up out of the way. But we spent an hour, got that all cleared up, closed off the bypass that was being created, and continued up the trail to the gauntlet and got everybody up the gauntlet in really not a whole lot of time.
Okay.
The problem was when we got to the top of the gauntlet, there was a group that was coming down the trail from the alpine side that we ran into, and they weren't nearly as geared as we were. And you could tell they didn't have as much experience as us. And so they were kind of like, hey, can we go down? Can we, cause they were in that little narrow section of trees and there's no way to get past
right
them.
Right after the rocks at the top, the little rock drop and then the trees.
Yeah. So they were all in there and there was no way for us to get past them. So there was a little bit of space at the top for us to get out of the way. There's just the four of our rigs.
Right.
So we're sitting there like, okay, no, well, that's okay. We'll get out of the way real quick. Let you guys come down real quick and then we'll be on our way. He said, okay, cool. Thanks, guys. And so they're sitting at the top of, there's six or seven of the rigs, right? And they're all out of their rigs, sitting at the top of the gauntlet, talking about it, while we're sitting there out of their way, waiting for them to come through.
Right.
And we're just kind of sitting here like,
And at this point, you're like, well, I'm going to get out of my rig, and I'm going to help them down so that we can get enough rigs through so that we can continue on. I know exactly where you're going, and you haven't even told me this story.
Yes, right? So I get out of the rig, and I'm like, hey, do you guys have any questions?
Yeah.
Do you need a hand with anything? And they're like, oh, no, we just haven't done this before. We've heard about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, going down is not a problem. Like, it's coming up. That's the problem because it's just loose and everything. Going down is no biggie. You just pick your lines well, put your tires up on the racks, and you'll squeal over everything if you need to. But I was like, going down's fine. You'll be fine. They're like, well, we're just trying to decide if we want to take this rig down. And I was like, well, if you go out the other end at Utica Reservoir, then yeah, just keep going down and out, and you can take the bypass at the stairs, and it'll be a fun trail. And they're like, I don't know if we should. I was like, you guys are going to be fine. Like here, and I kind of pointed out, I was like, here's the line to take down the gauntlet. Go here, 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 here. Once you get to here, take the side turn and then just go down. And they're like, okay. And so I was like, okay. So you guys going to do it? And they're all, okay, yeah, we'll do it. So they turn around and start walking back. And one guy walks back to the first rig and brings the first rig through. and sits up there for a little bit as he's like, okay, telling his spotter, I want to go there, 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 there. And his spotter's like, okay, okay, I got you, man. So he starts going down and going down, and then he continues going down, and he's still going down. And I'm kind of looking at everybody, and he's about, you know, halfway down the obstacle. And it's a big enough obstacle. You can feel like three or four rigs on there, right? Right?
Yeah. Between the there's an obstacle kind of at the top.
Uh-huh.
And then there's some big rocks about halfway down, mm-hmm, roughly. Mm-hmm. Or two-thirds of the way down.
Yep.
That's where the hairpin turn is.
Uh-huh.
And this is going down the obstacle.
Yeah.
And then there's a little ledge, like right after the big rocks. And then mm-hmm. it's just a rocky outlet.
Yeah.
So there's between the big rocks and the hairpin turn to the obstacle at the top, you can fit three rigs.
Yeah. Easily.
It would be easily, but there would be, I mean, it comfortably would be two.
Yes. Yeah. I would say, you know, bare minimum two, but you can fit on that entire obstacle.
You could get three. One rig in the rock section at the top,
yeah.
Two rigs at the bottom, in between
in the middle area,
mm-hmm. and as one rig's going down the ledges,
mm-hmm.
yep. or the ledge,
yeah.
there's only one.
So they're
so
sitting
he's
there.
He's about halfway down.
He's
and
about
everybody
halfway
else
down.
Is there
everyone's sitting. Still just kind of sitting there watching him, and I'm kind of sitting there thinking, all right, is the next rig going to get going? Come on, guys, let's go, let's go.
And yeah.
Nothing, nobody's moving, and so not only did they wait for the guy to get all the way to the bottom, but they waited for him to hike all the way back up to the top before the next person went to go get their rig and repeat the process.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm sitting here, I'm like,
I think I would have
it
just...
took you 25 fucking minutes to get one rig down this stupid obstacle. We're right. sitting here waiting for you guys to get by.
That's what I think I would have been like, hey, you know, can you guys move out of the way so that we can continue on? Or do you need us here to help you?
Yeah.
Right? Because if you don't need us, you're holding us up right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there's ways that, like, let's pull, like, you could put a, there's a, sort of a bypass route.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Around mm-hmm. the rocky section at the top. Mm-hmm. And you could drive, you could fit three rigs up that
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
that way. And you could get all the rigs out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just, it kind of just brings up an interesting point. It's like, at what point do you need to start being a jerk on these things, uh-huh. right?
You know, I try to be really nice on the trails. I try to be yeah. really patient. I try and live up to, you know, the trail etiquette stuff that we talked mm-hmm. about in our trail etiquette episodes. But at what point is enough enough?
Absolutely.
And you have to be a dick.
Right? Yeah. One of the trips that I was out on the Rubicon and they were doing the samurais were all out there, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There was a samurai on like full widths.
Okay.
And it was bomb. Like it had 42s. It was beat, you know, uh-huh. built. And it was beat, but uh-huh. it was built really well. And the guy knew how to drive it, right? And we're coming down towards Soup Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And there's already a line. Mm-hmm. And we walked up and we watched these guys trying to do it. And then, you know, people turned to me like, you going to do it? I'm like, nah, there's already a line. Like, I don't need to do it. I've done it before. Like, mm-hmm. if you guys want to watch me do it, I'll do it, you know. Mm-hmm. But and they're like, nah, we kind of want to continue on. And I said, okay, let's continue on. And so we walk back to our rigs and then this big samurai comes driving past us. We all get pull in behind him uh-huh. and he literally stops in the middle of the trail right
yeah
and blocks and there's people parked on the side to like try to go up Soup uh-huh. Bowl, and there's people parked on the other side to get out of the way of the trail
and
this guy
right
is parked right in the middle
yeah
you know and he hops out of his rig to go watch what's going on Soup Bowl
yeah
and I literally hop out of my rig at that point because I'm parked behind him
yeah
and I go and I walk up to him and I'm like hey you know we don't want to do Soup Bowl we just want to come right past can you move out of the way for us so we got like uh-huh. four rigs I want to come through
yeah
and he was totally cool he's okay. like oh yeah totally man you know sorry you know I'm like one be a little aware of your situation or the scenario that you're in or your surroundings
mm-hmm.
right you know and whenever I stop on the trail I always try to pull off the trail far enough
absolutely
in an appropriate area that gives enough room for somebody else to come by if they need to
mm-hmm. 100%
so
yeah, so
I think I would have talked. I think I would have spoken to them.
So what? I was about to turn in and start talking to them, and one of the guys in our group just kind of was like, "Well, I guess it's a good time for lunch," and he started pulling out lunch stuff.
Yeah,
and so I was like, "Okay, it's fine. We can have lunch here."
That
so,
makes sense.
Yeah,
that's a good alternative.
Good alternative yep. to what I was going to do. So, and he had brought
start knifing their tires.
Yeah. He had brought tacos from Costco. So apparently there's like taco kits you can buy at Costco.
Okay.
And so what he had done is what he had bought some of these taco kits, chicken, marinated chicken taco kits, and split them up into tinfoil packets, and he had them under his hood.
Oh.
Through the whole trail that we were going on.
Right.
So they were a little bit warm. They weren't under there long enough to really warm up, but it was better than cold tacos.
Sure.
But we just kind of sat there, had some tacos, had some drinks, and kind of watched them go down and helped them through the parts they needed help with. And that took about maybe 2 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. An hour and a half to 2 hours, somewhere around there.
You're like, we drove the whole trail to here.
Yeah.
In about the amount of time it took you guys to go down this one obstacle.
Yes. So,
and that obstacle is, if you're going from, what is it? What's the lake at the beginning? At the slabs.
At the southern end? Utica.
At Utica.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you start from Utica going up to Alpine,
mm-hmm.
the gauntlet is 3/4 the way through?
It's a little further than that. I would put it like 4/5. Just
yeah.
because, like, the only thing really after it is the rock pile, and it's a
right.
bypass. It also
yeah.
has a bypass. So, like, if you don't do the rock pile, you're off the trail, like, 15 minutes, 10 minutes
yeah.
after the gauntlet. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's pretty much right at the start.
Pretty much, yeah.
Coming
from
down,
the Alpine
from
end,
the
yeah.
Alpine side.
Yep.
Yeah, from the Alpine side, you hit the rock pile, which a lot of people don't, and mm-hmm. then you hit the gauntlet.
Uh-huh.
Right? And it's like, yeah. So, you guys did... let's just say 3/4 of the trail in 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
And then you sat for 2 hours to watch these people go down one obstacle.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. So,
it was a long lunch though.
It was a nice lunch, and we were a little bit ahead of schedule. So it was nice to kind of sit and relax and hang out with the guys and get to know these other two guys. I know Kelly pretty well, but the other two guys was kind of cool to kind of just hang out with and get
right.
to know them. So, As we finally got all them passed, and we get going down and towards the rock pile, right?
Okay.
And so we get to the rock pile, and there's a yellow Jeep, but I want to say it was a TJ. I'm pretty sure it was a TJ, yellow TJ, two-door, going up the rock pile.
Square headlights or round headlights?
It was round, so it was a TJ.
TJ, probably. Or a CJ.
Or it could have been a CJ. I'm pretty sure it was a TJ, though. And so he was going up the rock pile, up the easy route on the right-hand side. And so I got there and I kind of followed him up and went up the right hand side. And then I got to as I'm working my way up, he gets up, you know, that kind of the big rock at the very top of it. He goes up on top of the rock, parks the Jeep, gets out, and walks off the other side of the rock.
Off the other side, like, towards Alpine Lake?
Towards Lake Alpine, yes.
I'm so, like, you like blocked the trail.
Exactly. With four rigs right behind him. And I'm like, excuse me.
Like, was there like something? Did he purposefully block the trail because there was an issue of something happening in front of him?
No. That's what I thought at first. I thought because he got up there, he didn't like get up so that he could easily just keep going off the other side. He got up. And turned so that he was back facing down the rock pile and parked right there. And, you know, he technically wasn't blocking. There was still enough space for me to get through. I don't know if the JK on the full widths was going to be able to fit through, but I could squeeze through right there.
Yeah. And that's along near that tree?
It's where the giant,
really?
The big rock is.
Okay.
There's a giant, you know, mini car sized boulder on top of the plateau there.
So after he crawled up the obstacle,
uh-huh.
Did he drive around the big rock and point the other direction?
Yes.
Right. So you could squeeze behind him.
We could squeeze behind him, but he was up on the point where you were trying to come up
right.
that little buggy line. He
right.
was right
but
up
if
there.
If you went behind him, that's where you almost rolled into the tree.
Yes. So what I had to do was I had to go around the rock and then come back up and kind of finagle my way, like mm-hmm. do a little Austin Powers mm-hmm. turn to get positioned and angled right to go off
right.
the other side so I don't roll over like I almost did the last time.
Right.
So,
you tell the other guys just go up the bypass?
No, because they were already coming up the rock pile.
Ah.
And so I got off and I got down the other side and I you know, went down the trail a little bit to give enough room for everyone to get there. And I'm walking back and I found the guy sitting there talking to a couple of his buddies in their rig. And they had a nice FJ40,
mm-hmm.
But it wasn't built or anything. It was pretty stockish, but they weren't going to go up the rock pile or anything. He was just sitting there chatting with them.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm walking by, I'm like, hey, is this one of your guys' Jeeps up here on top of the rock pile? And the guy goes, yeah, that's mine. I was like, can you move it?
Yeah, you're blocking
the trail. We've got three rigs coming up. I know one of them is going to want to take the line that comes up right there. And so he goes, can I move it in a few minutes? I was like, I prefer you move it now just because we've got three rigs on the rock pile coming up right now.
Yeah.
And he kind of looked at me. He goes, okay, I'll be right over. And I was like,
thank you.
Are you serious? Like, get your ass up here. Get your fucking rig out of the trail, dude.
Yeah.
So anyways, I get up. I help the other guys get up. And while I was talking to him, the new guy made it up just fine. He went up the easy route behind me. And then the third guy went up the easy route behind him. And then the fourth guy, Kelly, came up the hard route that Adam went up.
Okay.
So he took the hard left there and came up the sloping ledge to make the Z hairpin turns.
Right.
And so finally that guy came up, moved his Jeep out of the way, and Kelly was able to come up and take that line up and get down and around. And I was just like, really, you guys?
Yeah.
Does nobody understand the point of trail etiquette in off-roading? I don't get it. So anyways, that was the Slick Rock trip. We had no issues. Nobody broke anything. It was a good day other than just those frustrating incidences. So right. More people need to be listening to Snail Trail 4x4 trail etiquette episodes. So.
Right.
So yeah, that was Slick Rock. I didn't break anything.
Don't block the trail.
Don't block trails, you guys, please. So yeah, that was the trip. Didn't break anything.
For the first, with
the new rig. So the added support we added to the rear shackle held up just fine. So that was good.
Awesome.
I found out that 4.5 PSI is the sweet spot for all four of my tires.
Okay.
At least with the 36 IROX, which I think that's going to be the last time I'm running those tires as well. So I'll get to figure it all out a new one now.
There we go. Which we'll talk about that
in a couple minutes here. But yeah, after the trail, I got back home and I was, you know, I'm getting ready for the Baja trip now, right?
Right.
So I was like, okay, I'm just going to go through. I know my drivetrain's working great. I can depend on it. The suspension's working good. Let me just go around and make sure everything's still tight. Because, you know, since the Deer Valley trip, the Oktoberfest, where I lost my nut on my drag link bolt, I was like, I am putting split washers on everything, Nylock nuts on everything, and Loctite on everything. And the front suspension shackles, the nuts had come loose.
Serious?
With all three of those, yes. They still come loose. They were only loose like a half a turn, maybe three quarters of a turn. But I was like, son of a bitch.
Interesting.
Why are these coming loose?
Huh.
So I tightened those down, and then I was like, well, now I'm getting like super paranoid about all my nuts and bolts on my suspension. So I went around and checked everything, and my front driver U-bolts were like finger loose.
Holy cow.
I was like, son of a bitch. So I torqued those back down. The passenger side was just fine. Those were still torqued down great, but the driver's side had like come undone and they were finger loose.
Wow.
I was like, fuck, man. All my steering stuff was still tight.
Okay.
Which was good. But I had to shorten my drag link.
Right.
So my drag link has been too long all these years.
Right.
And so I took the drag link off of the first gen, put it on the second gen with my pitman arm and everything and my whole steering. So my drag link was still a little bit long. And so I cut 3/8 of an inch. Off each side. So 3/8 plus 3/8, 6, so 3/4 of an inch.
Yep.
So 3/4 of an inch, I shortened the drag link down. And so I had to redo those bolts. So now I'm going to be super paranoid about checking them.
That's a good thing.
It is a good thing. It's a good thing to be paranoid.
I mean, I think we've talked about it too. And I mean, we'll have an episode coming up about things to check, but usually at the night, or the morning before I go out, you know, or on the trip, I'll usually do a quick run through of a bunch of bolts and things like U-bolts, shackles, you know, suspension wise. I have a bolt on my steering that loves to come loose and I've had it come all the way out
I've
lost my steering. And thankfully Like, I was driving down the road. I was on the road. And I start to turn, and my truck doesn't turn.
Oh, no.
Right? And I literally take the wheel, and I spin it, and I'm like, I've got gas and brakes and a clutch.
That's it.
And that's all. And so I downshift, right? And and for some lovely reason, the road started. I was in the slow lane on a two-lane road, and the road starts to very slightly turn left.
Okay.
And I hit my brakes, and my truck starts to veer right.
Oh, no.
And so, well, no, but it was a glorious situation because the road's turning one way, my truck's turning me the other way, so I can control myself turning off the road safely.
Oh, there
right?
you go. Okay.
And it was, they were both gradual enough that I was able to pull into the shoulder and stop and had no issues and then figured out what the problem was. And then, like, I religiously checked that bolt.
Yeah.
Now. You know, and everything, I've Loctited it, I've RTV'd it, I've, like, put another nut on it, and if it just is like, I'm going to come loose on Tuesday, like, it just does it randomly.
Jeez, man. Fucking steering bolts.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that was a surprise to me that I was just like, really? God. So anyways, that was the first thing. So that's going to be one thing I'm going to be checking every single day I'm in Baja is my suspension steering bolts.
We should paint stripe your bolts.
Absolutely. I'm going to invest in one of those. I was using a red fingernail polish from the secretary when she wasn't looking to mark all those. But there's a great paint pens out
paint
there
pens.
That all the Ultra 4 guys use.
And for those that don't know exactly what we're talking about, once you torque your bolt to a specific torque, and then maybe drive for a little while and check it again and make sure and tighten it and torque it again, then you can run a paint marker, a paint pen, down the bolt and then along part of the body or on, you know, part of the bracket
whatever
it is on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can visibly see if that nut or bolt has moved because the lines won't match.
Yep.
And then you'll know visually where you need to be looking, what needs to be tighter, you know, and what needs to be adjusted. So.
I'm probably going to do that now that we're talking about it.
No, it's a great idea. Yeah. And then you could just do the nut of the U-bolt and then go across the top bracket of the U-bolt. And then every time you can just take a peek at them.
Yep.
The only way that it's going to fail is if it like turns five times and perfectly lands up on that mark. And you're like, ah. But they're great. And you should do it on any bolt that is like any suspension bolt and any of your like steering components and things like that. And, yeah.
I mean, jam nuts are a great thing to do it on as well.
On the knuckles and all.
Yep.
Definitely.
So I'll be doing that. Other than that, getting the rig ready for Baja has kind of been the next big thing, right? So I've got to drive it 500 miles down into Baja, 500 miles back from Baja, and then roughly 800 miles in Baja.
Okay.
So
sounds fun.
Yeah, I mean, it should be fun, I think. I don't know. I'm not usually a big fan of desert Baja-ing.
Okay.
Just because I like rock crawling, that's how my rig is set up. So I'm kind of concerned about how the rig is going to do in whoops and desert scenarios.
You're going to hate life.
I'm going to hate life, I'm pretty sure. But I've talked to the guys, and he's taking an F-350. Two-wheel drive, F-250, some Chevy 2500, two-wheel drive, something like that, on 37s. So it's a Brodozer. And his passengers are going to have three dirt bikes. So there's going to be
interesting.
Three or sport bikes. What are those called?
Dual sports.
Dual sports.
Yeah.
So he's going to have three dual sports, a 2500 on 37s, two-wheel drive, and me in a second-gen 4Runner set up for rock crawling.
What a motley crew.
It'll be interesting, I think. But it's going to be fun. We're going down for a week. So Saturday to Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be in Ensenada when the Baja 1000 comes through for Thursday and Friday.
That'll be awesome.
And so that's going to be a lot of fun. And
don't go to Papa's and Beer.
Don't go to Papa's and Beer?
You've never been there, though, have you?
Nah.
It's a tourist trap.
Oh, okay.
Completely. And there's got to be, the one time I've been to Ensenada was on a cruise, and we get off the cruise and people are like, go to Papa's and Beer. And so we went to Papa's and Beer And it was fun for the cruise, but I don't, like, if you're in, if I were to go down again, I would never go there again.
Okay.
I would go find a local joint, get some good tacos.
Yeah.
Hang out, have some, you know, good beer.
Okay.
Don't drink the water, drink the beer.
Yeah. Drink the beer.
And, and yeah, I think that'd be, that would be awesome.
Cool. Just,
that'd be cool.
Good to
also
know.
I don't know what route you guys are going down into Baja, but I'll have to do a little bit of research. I'm going to have to phone a friend.
Okay.
But I want, because they, when you're driving down Highway 1, they're measuring things in kilometers, right? And I, so there's stops a lot, like at K8, there's a stop. At K11, there's a stop.
Okay.
You know, and I can't remember, there's, it's a K marker, and it's somewhere like 11, 12, or 13. Best, I hit the mic, best lobster tacos I've ever had in my life.
I don't like lobster, though.
Well,
I don't like seafood.
You will after this.
I will. I'll be a believer.
Yes. Oh, okay. My gosh.
I'll be a lobster.
I don't know
convert.
If it was the butter, the salt, the cilantro, whatever they did on those. I've never been able to find lobster tacos like that again.
Interesting. Okay. I'll take your word for it. We'll see when I get there.
Well, stop there.
Okay.
And have daddy eat some lobster tacos and tell you if they're the best he's ever eaten.
Okay. Fair enough. I will have him do that.
If you're going down one in that area.
Yeah,
that's the easiest way to get to Ensenada, but I don't know
how you're
doing it.
This whole trip to me is kind of like Ultimate Adventure, right?
Yeah.
I'm not getting very many details. I'm being told, show up in Visalia, California at this day, this time, and we're all going to leave from Visalia, go down to Baja. We'll take you around Baja. We'll end up in Ensenada on these 2 days. But other than that, I don't know any of the details.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, not the way I like to run trips, but yeah. I will trust you, I guess.
What you do know, because I did happen to catch some of the conversation for the details, is you are spending the night in a location every night that is not including camping.
Correct. There's some kind of shelter wherever we stay each night.
Right. You don't have to worry about food. Dinner.
Supposedly. Yep.
Or breakfast, supposedly.
Supposedly.
But you do have to supply yourselves with lunches. And bring enough water or beer for yourselves.
Yep. And so that's pretty much the extent of the details,
right.
I know.
Well, and so that lightens your load a little bit, because you don't have to worry about camping so much.
True. Yeah, I mean, you'll bring
a
tent.
Camp chair. You know, you don't need to bring a tent. You don't need to bring a hammock because there's no trees out there.
Hang from the cactus?
Yeah.
The cacti?
Cacti to forerunner.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't need to bring like cooking supplies and things like that, you know.
I don't need to. I think I'm still going to bring a camp stove and mountain houses.
Yeah.
Just in case.
In an emergency. Do you have a water filter?
I have a Life Straw.
Okay.
So I have one
that's
of those, but it's
probably
like,
good enough
you can't really pump water out of it. I mean, I could like collect water into a jug and drink it out of there, but you can't really like pump water through a Life Straw.
No.
So
no, and the Life Straw is made for just that. It's like fill your canteen with water and then drink through the Life Straw.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I have one of those. I'm going to take a ton of water anyways. Mm-hmm. We're going to take something like 100, 150 bottles, something like that.
Oh, damn.
So, I'm going to have my fridge, and we'll be able to kind of like transfer drinks into the fridge and take them out when we need them to. And
your
then,
fridge didn't get stolen?
It did. I got a new one.
Oh, okay.
So the guy that I got my old one from, which is just, it's an off-branded Dometic fridge.
Yeah.
It's a 42 liter. He had one left that he was saving for himself just in case his stopped working for some reason.
Oh, wow.
And so he goes, hey, I feel bad about everything that happened here. You can have mine, my last one that I've been saving. And I was like, oh my God, thank you so much.
Sold it to you.
Yes.
Yeah. He didn't give it to you.
No, he didn't give it to me. He sold it to me, but I mean, it's
not
phenomenal.
Tyler's month.
It was a phenomenal price. So for a 42 liter fridge, it's an awesome price. So
yeah.
I got that. So I have a fridge again. It works great. I've already used it multiple times. So I'll be taking that. I'm taking some chairs just in case.
Yeah.
And then clothes and a lot of water, pretty much.
Right.
And that's kind of like
about it. Some spare parts, some tools, and then,
Yeah.
So let's get back to sort of prepping. What needs to happen to the 4Runner?
So I fixed the window.
Okay.
So I redid the window. I went down to Rancho Toyota Recycling. Those guys are awesome. And got a new window for $35. And wow. Went to AutoZone, picked up some window tint, and put on the tint myself, and then, which is really badly done. I didn't have the right tool, so it didn't come out terribly great, but I'm like, I'm never sitting back there. I don't care. The only one who's going to look through there is the dog. So anyways, that's on. The whole window is put back in. That window, those back windows on those second-gen 4Runners are a bitch to replace.
Oh, I bet.
You have to take the full cover off. You have to take the wedge window out of the door. In order to get that out, you have to take out the metal
track
support beam
okay.
in there, too. You have to take that out. You have to take out all the trim around it and then put it all back together like in one piece. And it's pain in the ass. And I was like, I wish I'd broken a front window. Those you just slide in.
Right. So when you removed it, did it shatter?
Oh, yeah. Well, for the most part, what I was able to do was I had to cut the tint on the inside around the door track that it's in. And then I kind of grabbed it from the inside and outside with gloves, and I had a tarp down and kind of pushed it out of the window.
Okay.
And then dropped it into the trash can. So it was able to come out in one piece except for the edges.
Got it.
That were stuck there. And then I just kind of picked the edges out with a flathead screwdriver and an ice pick and then vacuumed it with a shop vac.
Oh, that's funny.
So I got all that out, got the new window in. It works great. It's just fine. And then while I was in there, I was like, the door itself is relatively easy to take apart. Like the panel comes off in like 30 seconds. So I was like, let's go and figure out why my front speakers are not working.
Okay.
So the speakers on my front doors on the inside are not working. And so I was like, let's look and find out why. So I open up the door and they weren't even connected to any wires.
Serious?
The wires were there, but they weren't connected to them.
James.
I'm like, James, come on, man. I need music. I need music in my life. So I connected them back up to the speakers. And the driver's side, there was nothing wrong with it. No issues. Passenger side, I took and when I shut the door, the entire sound system like shorted out.
Oh, what?
And it gave out this really, like the whole thing went berserk. And it was a really loud noise coming from the speakers, like electronic interference.
Yeah.
And so I opened up the door real quick and it went away. And I was like, and so I kind of slowly shut the door. And as soon as the door latch hit the door frame, it went crazy again. And so I was like, what is going on? Is there a short somewhere? And so I, you know, shut everything off and turned everything back on. And the speakers would not turn back on. Only the sub was working.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, great. Did I blow the amp? What's going on here? So I reset the amps, took the fuses out, put them back in, and got them working again. And so I disconnected the speakers in the front doors.
Yeah.
And put the panels back on and everything and then shut them and just left it with the speakers undone. And I was like, maybe that's why the speakers were undone.
Yeah. Never mind, James.
Yeah, never mind. And then so I went to start the car to go park it. And from that point on, I had a really, really bad alternator whine in the sound system.
Oh.
So I don't know if...
Coming through the speakers that were connected?
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so anytime, you know, the engine RPMs go up, the whine gets louder and higher pitched and everything. Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, well, this is not going to do. And I don't have enough time to go and rip out the whole system and rewire it or figure out where the short is and everything. So I was like, fuck it. So I just took it down to an audio placer near me. And they looked at everything. They're all, yeah, none of this audio is done with audio cabling. It's all unshielded house wiring.
Oh, weird.
And I was like, James?
I've always heard that you could run speaker wire with lamp cord, but...
You can't. I mean, that's what he had done, right?
Yeah.
It was lamp cord. But the whole thing is that, for my concern,
or
because
in
I'm
an auto,
because I'm going to be running a lot of radio equipment in there eventually. I need all of my wiring needs to be shielded wiring.
Got it.
And so the audio guys are like, none of this is shielded wiring. It's pretty much all lamp cord. And I was like, theoretically, you can run lamp cord. It doesn't run that much power through. So it's a thick enough gauge. It would be no problem for power wise.
Right.
But they said that they wouldn't touch the system unless there was actual audio cable in there.
Oh, wow.
To diagnose why I was getting alternator whine.
Oh, for the
for the diagnostic and everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so how much is it going to cost to rewire the whole thing? It's going to be $800.
Holy cow.
To rip out all the wiring and rewire new wiring. And I was like, why is it that much? He said, it's just labor. It's 6 hours of labor. And I was like, wow. He goes, here's another option for you. The amps that are in there are not the best quality. The speakers that are in there are not. They're okay. Speakers are not the best quality, but we can hook you up with a whole new amp. It's a 5-channel amp, so you'll be able to get rid of one of your amps.
Okay.
And have the space underneath one of your seats for whatever you want to run. Because I told him I wanted to run radios eventually, ham radios, so I needed it to be electrically quiet.
Yeah.
And he said, so having that would definitely help. And that was going to be another $400 than just ripping out and redoing all the wiring.
So ripping out and all the wiring would be $800. And then adding, well, ripping out, doing all the wiring, adding an amp
and four speakers,
would be $1,200.
$1,200 total, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, how does the math work on that? And he goes, we give a pretty steep discount on labor when you buy stuff from us. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. I get that. You know, sure. Okay, let's go ahead.
Well, you were going to be buying new wire.
So, yeah.
That didn't count.
I said, yeah, let's go ahead. Let's do it. How much time is this going to take? And they're all, oh, I'll have it done today.
6 hours.
Yeah. And I got it into them at 11 a.m. They had it done by 5 p.m. So, yeah, 6 hours pretty much.
Wow.
So I went back and picked it up. I was like, man, you guys did quick work and it was clean work and it was well done. So, I'm happy with it, and I don't have alternator whine. Everything's electrically quiet.
Sounds good.
So it should be good for the trip. So that was the next big kind of snafu, and like, oh, man, I got to get this done.
Yeah.
So the rest of it now, now that my IROCs are shot, I can't drive them another 2,000 miles. I'll blow a tire.
Yeah.
So
they are, one of them is
really bad. There's no more tread on it. So
great for snow wheeling.
Maybe. I mean, there's no tread on it, so you won't be able to grab any snow. I guess if it's like powdery snow.
Time to go to Moab.
Yeah, time to go to Moab. It'd be great at Moab. That's where it'd be good at. But anyway, so I'm going to take the Maxis Creepy Crawlers that originally came on the second gen that we were going to put on the first gen. I'm going to use those for the Baja trip. And then when we get back from Baja, I'm going to take those, put them back on the first gen, and sell them with the first gen.
Right.
And then the IROCs, I'm going to sell with the beadlocks and wheels because I'm getting a set of 3950 IROCs.
What?
Yeah, baby.
Heck yeah.
So the 3950, 1350 wide, 17 inch rim radials. So I'm not going to do the bias ply anymore. IROCs. And we're going to have to do some trimming and a little bit of pounding.
Heck
get
yeah.
Get a BFH out. And I haven't 100% decided, but it's looking like I'm going to get some Raceline beadlocks.
Ooh.
From Sneevies.
All right.
So, Sneevies is going to hook me up with a good price on some Racelines or some other ones if I decide I want to go another way. But I'm looking at the 17-inch, 9.5-inch wide Racelines, the blacked out wheel with the machined beadlock so that I can just... I'm thinking I'm going to, what's it called? Plasti dip the ring, neon green.
Okay.
So I'll have the neon green beadlock ring.
The benefit of the machined color beadlocks is when you scratch them, they're still a machined colored beadlock.
Exactly.
But if you plasti dip it, it'll be green and then it'll be shiny machine color.
Yeah. That'll be great.
So,
yeah, polished is nice. It's just the plasti dip sticks. And paint in general sticks to the machine finish better, a little bit better than polished. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the machine finish, and I'm looking like that's the route I'm going to go.
Nice.
So I'll make the decision once I get back from Baja. But yeah, so I'll be selling the IROCs if anybody wants at least two decent ones and then two really bad ones, but a 15-inch beadlocks. and Toyota lug pattern, 15 by 10 beadlocks. I'll have some for sale later. So that's the next thing we had to deal was the tires.
Yep. So we swapped those out today.
We also went around and I had a brake light out.
Yes.
And I decided that I wanted different headlights anyways, because those stock headlights suck. They don't get any light out of them. So I just went and got all new light bulbs for around the entire vehicle. All the headlights, the blinker lights, the daily running lights, the brake lights, reverse lights, all those stuff.
License plate lights.
Yeah. License plate lights. And we did all those today.
Yes, and that was good because you don't want to go down into Mexico with a burnt out bulb.
Yeah, give them any kind of reason to, exactly. to pull me over or do anything. So I've already been pulled over once for having that brake light out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you did. When I went up to Oktoberfest. When I was going up to Oktoberfest, yeah, I got pulled over, and the guy was like, well, I pulled you over originally for your brake light, but as you went on the dirt, it came back on, so I had to pull you over for mud flaps and stuff.
Yeah. You can pull you over for multiple reasons, but yeah.
So we did those, all the lights. We did. We replaced the winch line today.
Yep.
So we took off the steel winch line, put a synthetic line on there. Again, that was also from Sneevee's.
Yeah.
So that was the one that he got me... reimburse me. He was just being a good guy.
Yeah.
And taking care of me because the synthetic line I originally got from him was stolen when my rig was stolen. So he got me a new synthetic line free of charge. Thanks, Steve. We put that on today. Did a nice video of it. And I finished my exhaust. So I welded up a new exhaust, which we've talked a little bit about. People are making fun of me for it.
Yeah.
And so I have an upstream and downstream O2 sensors right now.
So is the check engine light on?
It is not on.
Nice.
And the engine is running great.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I might hit like 20 to 21 miles a gallon with this tank since I redid the O2 sensor and put an O2 sensor back in it.
Dang.
Yeah.
I got really, really good gas mileage one time. I was loaded down and I drove from my house to Hollister Hills.
Uh-huh.
And I went like 55 miles an hour on the freeway. And I was up like 22 to 24 miles a gallon.
Wow. In Bobcat?
In Bobcat.
That's crazy.
Yeah. On the 37s.
Yeah.
And geared and everything.
Yeah.
And it's just like, when you're not going fast.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just cruising. And once you get that mass going.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't want to slow down.
Carries, yeah.
You know, and the gas mileage was pretty good.
Yeah. So I'll be interested to see. I haven't had a full. I started this tank of gas at like 3/4 of a tank with the new, the downstream O2 sensor in it.
I'm going to have to teach you before you officially leave on how to do stories on Instagram.
Yes, you will.
Because some of those times are fun. Like you get to a gas station, you're like, all right, fill in the 4Runner up. Let's see what gas mileage I get. And then you 400 miles down the road or 300 and something miles down the road. All right, I got, 20, 19, 20, 21, 24 gallons, whatever you got.
But
and those are things that you're not going to throw on, your feed on Instagram because, nobody necessarily cares that much. But it's fun to throw them up for 24 hours for people following you.
Yeah. So. Okay. See me, I would just be like, I'm going to put on my feed, screw you guys, what you think.
Yeah.
But
more important things should go on the feed.
More like cool pictures should be going on the feed.
Or things like, here's my 4Runner all loaded down, we're ready to leave for Baja.
Yeah.
And then that day, you're telling the story of you going to Baja.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, fair enough.
Stories are stories.
I'll have to play around with it. So... that is kind of up to date on everything I've done so far.
Yes.
To the 4Runner.
Okay.
So it's all set, ready to go. Theoretically, I think I can do the Baja trip right now the way it is sitting, no problem. But there's some other things I would like to get done.
Yes. What are those?
The big one is I need a ham radio, a mobile ham radio, which I have.
Okay.
I have. It's all ready to go in. I just need to sit down and install it.
Right. And by mobile, it always messes with me.
Yeah.
Mobile is actually a fixed radio.
It's a hardwired fixed radio, right. Correct.
Yeah. It's not a handheld radio.
Yeah. Yeah. Ham radio terminology is handheld is considered a handheld or a handy talkie or an HT.
Okay.
And then a mobile radio is one that goes in a car.
Yes.
And then there's a base station, which is one that you sit on a desk and it doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
So
I just needed to clarify that because a mobile isn't a handheld version that you're going to walk around with.
Correct. So I have four handhelds, which I'm going to take with me as well, and batteries and everything, just in case the other guys don't have radios. But I really, really need to get, I want to get my big car radio put in before I go on this trip.
Okay.
So I have that to do. I want to find out why my passenger side doors, the locks are not automatically going up and down with the motor. So I think the motor is burned out in my front door, or it's on its way out, because it'll kind of slightly move. Sometimes it'll unlock and lock.
Oh, interesting.
So I think the motor is just going out. It's burning out. And the rear, I think the motor is out or it's disconnected. Something's going on there. So I got to open up the doors, figure that out, then make a trip to Rancho Toyota Recycling to get the motors. My key fob is intermittent on when it works. So I need to open up the key fob and solder connection.
Or change the battery.
I think it's the connection side, because I have two fobs that came with the truck. I opened up one, and the negative, the ground, had come off the circuit board inside the key fob.
Okay.
So, like, it was still lighting up when you push the buttons, but nothing was happening. And this is kind of intermittent that way.
Okay.
So, you open that up, check it out, and change the batteries, too, while I'm in there. I want to tack weld my clamp, my steering clamp on my tie rod for the hydro assist. I got that replaced. I centered it on the tie rod so I can have full lock either side. So I want to get that tack welded on. I want to redo my rock lights so that I don't have just a spotlight pointing straight down at the ground underneath my sliders.
You're right.
And they spread out away from the vehicle more so I can actually like see rocks around the vehicle.
I don't know if you're necessarily going to need that for Baja.
I don't think I will need it for Baja. They're saying we're not going to do any night wheeling at all. So that's kind of pretty low priority.
Not a whole lot of rock. Like, it's not going to be rock crawling. You're going to be somewhat in an open area. I mean, you're going to be in, like, dust, dirt, fire roads.
Yeah, pretty much. Know?
So move that one to the bottom end of the list.
It is. It's on the bottom of the list. I want to get, and the last thing is I want to get my interior lighting. I want some kind of interior lighting in there right now because the dome light doesn't work. I overrode the, map lights on the rearview mirror. So I bought an RGB 17-foot strip of LED lights.
Okay.
That I'm going to put up inside the 4Runner. And then that runs on a remote that you can set what color you want. Oh, on that geez. Strip. So I'll have party lights inside the 4Runner.
Can you make it do party?
No. Party mode? I don't know. I'll have to look at it a little more closely. I don't know
just if have it go pink, red, yellow, green, blue, yellow, purple, yellow.
Give my dad a seizure when he's got there.
I like yellow, apparently.
Yeah. Yellow.
I said it like four times.
So, and then the power outlet. I need to grab the power outlet. It's a 3 12-volt accessory outlet. Like a cigarette lighter accessory outlet. I have it in the first gen. I need to pull that from the first gen and put that into the second gen for this trip so that I can run my tablet and charge the phones and the fridge.
Got it. Yeah.
All off of it. So shout out to Gaia GPS.
Okay.
Because they have all the maps of the entire Baja.
Oh, sweet.
So I've been told we will not be going into Baja Sur.
Okay. Like
southern of Baja. We're not going to go below that line that divides them. So I just downloaded all of the northern half of Baja onto my phone and tablet.
How much space did that take up?
That it only took 1.3 gigs.
That's not bad at all.
It wasn't really bad. Yeah. Surprisingly.
But that is a lot of data.
It's a lot of map on there for sure. But now I don't have to, I'll have
You'll
maps
never have to worry about it. Yeah,
exactly. So shout out to them. I'm you know, still stoked on that guy software. We need to do an episode as well. So we've had some questions come in about it. But so that's kind of where the Baja planning is at. I would have really loved to have a toolbox in there for the trip, but that's not going to happen in the amount of time I have. So that's kind of been nixed off of the thing altogether.
I have a mobile one you could borrow.
Your big heavy one.
I've got another one.
Oh, okay.
In the shop, I have a one that's similar to the black rubber made one that I have.
Well, I have a bag that I keep all my tools in. Mm-hmm. So it's it's just the bag can't close anymore.
Right.
With my tools. So.
Well, I got that sort of cinch bag thing off of Amazon, mm-hmm. and I still put my toolbox also.
Okay.
And I just have them separated, wrenches and things are in this bag and sockets and things are in the box. And it was all in one and it was way heavy. I didn't ever trust holding the handle. It was that heavy. And now I split the weight up into two places and it's actually pretty nice. It's easy to move around.
I may do that because I've been starting to get frustrated trying to find sockets. I have three rails of sockets in there, plus others free floating in the bag.
What rails and wrenches? What do you have?
I have millimeter short socket, millimeter deep socket, and some standard deep sockets.
Mm.
And then I have I have millimeter short, millimeter long, deep sockets, 3/8, and millimeter deep socket, 1/2-inch drive.
Okay.
And then I have a few, 3/8 and a half standards, 3/4 and 9/16, the ones that I know translate to 19 millimeters and 14 millimeters.
Right, right. And then you need some standards like 15/16 and 7/8. Mm-hmm.
And 15/16 for suspension.
1 1/4 and a 32, 32, 34, 2 1/4 socket.
Oh, the 54 millimeter?
54
millimeter socket, yeah. 1 1/4 for the Pitman arm.
Do you have
Pitman
that?
Nut. 1 1/4?
No, the 2 1/4.
No, yeah. I don't have that one.
Do you need to borrow it?
Maybe. Yeah. I had one.
Yeah,
I might need to borrow it. That might be a nice thing to borrow. So
okay.
So that's the
because I don't think I'm going wheeling while you're gone.
What?
I got 900 videos to edit.
That's true. Going to SEMA kind of kills video editing.
Yeah, I wasn't able to do any editing that week. So
yeah.
Luckily I was able to get ahead, but now I just have a lot of videos I need to get done.
Yeah. Well, we shot, 4 videos today?
Did we?
Three plus the winch tip.
Lights. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Winch. What was the other thing?
Winch tip. We had 2 or 3 light videos for the different lights.
Oh, right.
So you have your reverse, your tail, and your headlights.
Tail lights, headlights, winch tip, winch.
Yeah.
Four.
Well, and then the reverse lights. Or did we include the reverse
we
lights?
Did, with, oh, reverse lights. Yeah.
With the tail
we
lights.
We did tail lights and reverse lights.
Headlights, winch line, and winch tip. So 5
Jeez.
Videos today.
Yeah. I think those might come out all in one day.
Nice.
Because they're short.
Yeah.
So
they're short. They're good things that you can catch on a break at work or something like that. Maybe a bathroom break while you're hiding from your kids.
Well, a lot of it is, this is information for the person that just bought one of these and doesn't really know how to tear it apart.
Yeah.
Where a lot of us, out here in the Toyota world, for the most part, know already how to kind of do these things. But it's the 16-year-old that spent a few thousand dollars to buy a rig that he wants to learn how to work on.
Yeah.
Yep. That this video's for him.
Yay. Hi, 16-year-old. Hope you enjoy. So cool. Yeah, that's the.
Well,
that's,
and what's funny is there's a 16-year-old voice in the video.
There is?
Yeah, Kermit.
Shut up. I hate you. So yeah, that is.
Too bad you didn't
on that
crack.
Note, we are wrapping up. Get out of here. Shh. Quiet. So yeah, that's the Baja Prep 2019 hashtag.
Yeah.
So it'll be really fun. I'm looking forward to it. I've never been to the Baja 1000. I've only seen trophy trucks in person at Hammers.
Yeah.
And I didn't get to watch any of them actually race.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
So this is going to be awesome. I'm pretty excited
for it.
You're
going to have a blast. I'm super excited for you too.
Yeah. I've never been to Ensenada, so that'll be fun. And I've never really gone romping around in the desert in a 4x4 before, so that'll be fun.
That'll be an adventure.
Yeah.
That's freaking rattle can.
Yeah. Leaf Springs and the Whoops are going to be interesting.
Oh, geez, no.
So,
no, they're not.
Anyway, so that about does it. We're going to wrap this up. If you want to get a hold of us, if you have any questions or you have any feedback about Baja or the Baja prep or other stuff you want to see done to the 4Runner, because it's still not necessarily a full blank slate, but there's still quite a few other things that can be done to it, shoot them on in to jimmy@snailtrail4x4.com or tyler@snailtrail4x4.com. Those are the emails. You can always find us on the gram. And apparently, Jimmy is going to teach me how to do stories here in the next couple days before I go. And so you'll be able to see all those fun new stories at 4X4 Toyota Tyler. And you'll probably see some test stories from Jimmy over on Snail Trail 4X4. Showing, Tyler, you push this button right here. Here's where you point it. So yeah, that's about it. I can't think of anything else. Cool. Do you have any final words for everybody?
Did you get international calling?
Oh, shit. With that, my friends, keep crawling.
All right, I got one for you.
You got a joke?
I do.
All righty. Let's ready? Hear it.
This is a great one. And actually, it's sort of a continuation of last episode's.
Okay. What, a cow thing? Something cow about thing. Cows?
Yep.
Okay. I'm ready for cow jokes. Bring on the cow jokes.
What do you call a cow with one leg?
Wait, what was the first one? It was a cow with no legs.
No legs.
And that was ground beef.
Yes. And a cow with one leg.
Beef. I don't know.
You are so close.
I don't know.
Steak.
Okay, fair enough.
There you go. What do you call a guy with no arms and no legs in the bush?
Dan?
Russell.
No. Russell. Nice.